Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the Dork Forest. I'm Jackie Cation. I'm your host of the Dork Forest. Jackie Cation. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com. FamilyPetAncestry.com was purchased by me because it made me laugh. I laughed, you guys. And it just points to JackieCation.com. Everything is available on JackieCation.com or DorkForest.com. The Dork Forest is a podcast, and it is available on iTunes, AllThingsComedy.com, and probably repurposed by any number of other vehicles to put on a device of your choosing. Let's do the credits. The credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio. Mike Rickberg composed and sang the song you just heard, sang with his wife Sarah. Mike will sing again his words to the Mexican hat dance at the end of the program. Vilmos fixes the website, JackieCation.com. Jackie, there, if you like the show, there are many ways to support the show, not the least of which, and not unappreciated, word of mouth. Let the people know. You can tag me on Twitter at JackieCation. And or Facebook. There's a Ranger page on Facebook if you want to join and talk to other Rangers of the Dork Forest. And you could talk up the show. That'd be a great way to support the show. Very basic way to support the show is there's a PayPal donation button. Knock yourselves out. You may donate hard cash. I have one person who donates via Venmo because she doesn't like PayPal. But I appreciate whatever's happening. You can use the Amazon banner. The Amazon banner is also just it's available on dorkforest.com or jackiecation.com. It's a little link to Amazon, essentially. It's a portal to Amazon. You order like normal. It doesn't cost you extra. The Dork Forest gets a bit of a kickback. That is a way to support the show that doesn't cost you anything if you order from Amazon. Another way to do it would be to get merch. If you want a Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirt or just the logo Dork Forest t-shirt, my stand-up shirt, the Spooky Reading Girl shirt, those are all available on the store page on JackieCation.com, along with my albums and DVD. You can get all of my albums and DVD as downloadable. iTunes, Amazon, the special, the Horcrux special, this will make an excellent Horcrux special, is available on ComedyFilmNerds.com on their downloadable page. And you can, or you can get a hard copy of the DVD from JackieCation.com. I have a new album, speaking of which, just came out March 3rd, 2017, I did good, you guys. I was on the top of the list on Amazon and iTunes, and I never have been, so I'm going to toot my own horn. It is called I Am Not the Hero of This Story. It is available for download from Amazon, from iTunes, and it will be available from as a hard copy by the end of the month. I'm getting them printed up, and you'll be able to order them in the store from JackieCation.com. If you are in another country besides the United States, well, first of all, congratulations. Second of all, and iTunes or Amazon isn't working for you, email me, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and I have a way that you can just buy a $10 download card. And I just send you a picture of it, you download it, and then you PayPal me $10, and our lives are complete. These episodes are all from the Joko cruise. I went on a cruise with 1,780 nerds. It was a Dork Forest bonanza, and I recorded 6 episodes, so I'm using the intro for this, for all of them. The Joko Cruise is based on a guy named Jonathan Colton, who is a musician and very talented and wonderful, and if you get a chance, it's called the Joko Nerd Cruise, and it was great, and I recorded a live episode, which didn't cost me anything, so I'm just releasing it normal, and then 5 other episodes. None of these are premium episodes because they didn't cost me anything to make, so I'm just putting them out. There are premium episodes at Bandcamp. The dorkforest.bandcamp.com has probably a dozen premium episodes, which were recorded live in front of an audience. Cost me a couple of bucks to make, so I charge a couple of bucks to buy them. They are $2 each on the dorkforest.bandcamp.com. There is also a storytelling album there that I put, which is $4, and then 17 episodes of The Dork Forest before it was pre-recorded that I picked out, that I did as a 10-year anniversary album. That is free if you wish to listen to 17 old episodes of The Dork Forest, my favorite 17, I think, from those first 215 episodes. Anyway, the only other thing at JackieCation.com that you might like to see is my calendar. When I'm doing stand-up, where I'm doing stand-up, it is at JackieCation.com. It is updated all the time. You can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all the things. Anyway, longest intro ever. Let's get into it because it's awesome. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm still on the ship, you guys. Joko crew, still happening. Still talking to dorks. Probably could talk to 1,780 of them. But now, talking to Hal Lublin, which you're a fancy dork.
I'm a very fancy dork.
It's hard to be you sometimes, how fancy you are.
It's difficult, but I'm willing to bear the burden so others don't have to.
It's great. Hal Lublin, people might know from Twitter, which is at Hal Lublin.
That's true.
And L-U-B-L-I-N.
Yes.
And you're on the welcome to Night Vale.
I am.
But you have two podcasts on Max Fun.
Yes.
We got this.
Yes.
And Tights and Fights.
Yes.
Tights and Fights, of course. Pro wrestling.
Of course, yes.
We may get to it, but I went with your other dorkdom.
Yes.
Because that was entertaining for me. Not yes. that I don't like the idea of both of them.
Can I throw in one more podcast that
yeah.
I host that's not on the Max
yeah,
Fun
yeah.
network? It's called Surprisingly Nice.
Oh, my God. You do a lot of...
And that's me with Travis McElroy from My Brother and Me, which is a Maximum Fun podcast.
Oh, right. Yeah,
so everything
yeah.
I do orbits Maximum Fun. Now.
Right. And Maximum Fun, the drive is this week, I believe,
it
right?
Is. It
How
is.
How long does it
just
last?
Just begun. It started on the 20th, and it runs through
March?
The 31st, I believe.
Okay. So it's the last 2 weeks of March.
Yes. And our first episode, assuming this has come out the 20th or beyond.
Right.
Our first episode is now available for download of The Drive, which is us with Weird Al Yankovic talking about Monty Python songs.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, as a fundraiser for Nerdist, which doesn't ever need to happen. Chris, you listen? Anyway, so
you guys are good. It's fine.
You're good. It's all working out. You're not living check to check, you and the lady. It'd be fun to do a Jackie and Laurie, the first one, because
yeah.
it was such a disaster. And we have five in the can that Laurie's like, just bury them. And I'm like, oh, those could be moneymakers at one point, because people will be like, what was it? And
yeah.
it's like, well, we didn't know that anyone would listen, so we named too many names, probably. And it's a classic stand-up comedy error.
Yeah,
anyway,
of course.
So, Hal Lublin, let's talk about Saturday Night Live.
Let's talk about it.
I have only seen in 4-minute clips on YouTube.
Really?
Yes.
So not as a younger person, never
as a child,
watched it?
Nothing.
I mean, we're talking about 42 years.
42
of
years.
Television.
And I, not much older than that, but was available. It was available to me.
Yeah.
The whole time. Didn't care.
Didn't care. Why
have
not? I've
never cared about, well, now we're going to interview me.
Yeah, I want to find out.
Sketch comedy for me mm-hmm. has to be much like, for some reason, I am more tolerant of crummy stand-up comedy than bad sketch comedy.
Is that because with sketch comedy, there's so much invested in terms of we've got costumes, we've built a set.
There's four of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Because with improv, I'm even a little better with improv. Because I'm actually, improv, I just feel like I'm watching somebody rehearse. And it's, which, and then I saw really, really good improv.
Right.
And I think I saw it was Sean Conroy and Matt Besser mm-hmm. and Asshat.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, I see. If you do improv for 20 years, it is a learned skill and you can be really, really good at it and you don't care. I've taken some improv classes
sure.
and I have enough experience to not just blurt out the thing that I want to blurt out. But I know that that's what people do
right.
for the first 6 years in stand up and probably improv and probably everything.
Yes.
And Matt Besser and Sean Conroy, they know that the first thing they're going to blurt out isn't going to be anything horrifying. It's going to lead somewhere.
Yes.
If they say something horrifying, they know that they're saying something horrifying.
They're given over to the process.
Yeah.
I think in terms of the leeway you'll give a performer, improv gets the most leeway because we're all bought into the premise that you're making it up as you go.
Right.
Then stand up, I think gets leeway as well because, you know, the best stand ups are able to deviate. Except with the exception of Carlin, who I saw years ago, not that he couldn't deviate, but I
saw
him.
Did you see two shows in a row or something?
No, I saw him in 97 and
okay.
he just had an album out
mm-hmm.
and I listened to the album because everything Carlin.
Right.
And he performed, it would be like going to see U2 on the Achtung Baby tour, and all they did was perform an exact studio recreation of their album.
Yes.
So it, with the exception of him at one point getting tangled up in his wires and having to sort of tangle around them. And
right.
May I curse on this?
Please,
show?
Swear it up.
He goes, you ever do this? You look like a fucking asshole. Like, that was it. It was a
that
funny
was the
moment.
One riff?
Yeah, and then everything else was exactly...
Almost timing-wise and everything?
Yeah, as opposed to, like, Dennis Leary, who felt a little bit looser, and there are...
My brother,
you know.
Was it... Somebody saw Leno, two shows. It was a comic. It wasn't my brother. And saw both shows, the 8 and the 10:30. And he said it was kind of fascinating because he stuck to the same beats, and he did exactly the same show both shows.
Right.
And, so, yeah, I mean, with stand-up, you can. You can go see an album.
Sure.
Like, though... It is, if you don't write a set list, you don't stick to the album. You end up meandering right. around the vault.
Or if you're Robin Williams, you just grab whatever's in your environment and
right and play with that too.
Yeah.
So, or Ian Bagg, I guess.
Or Ian Bagg, but sketch gets the least amount because you go, you guys rehearsed this,
right?
You have invested a lot of time into these four.
That's
or five
probably
minutes
exactly
we're seeing.
Why I'm yeah.
But here's the beauty of SNL.
Yes,
is it's. It's always produced over the course of a week.
Right.
So I think Tuesday is the pitch or Monday is the pitch meeting.
Right.
Then they're culling down sketches. They're rehearsing like maybe Wednesday, Thursday. Like Tuesday is all night writing.
Yeah.
Or Monday night to Tuesday is all night writing. And then they're rehearsing. So they do one dress rehearsal and one and a live show.
And that's
day
it.
On Saturday. So it's.
It's, you know, more improv. Show, it's super fresh.
Yeah, I think Lorne Michaels used to say is we don't do the show because we're ready. We do it because it's 11:30 on a Saturday night.
Right. Which, yeah, maybe I should. And with sketch, because that might be why I judge it a little harsher. Just
sure.
Because I always think that they only have one or two jokes and then they keep going.
Right. It's that, hard to, like, I think the SNL style tends to be, the sketches tend to be long.
Yeah.
If they find something that works, they milk it to death. And that may be a function of having to come up with. You know, it's not like
they have to fill the hour.
You're not running Cheers where you have the same characters every week, and it's like, well, we know how they've been developing over time, so let's come up with new premises.
These are new people, and yeah. It's often topical.
Exactly,
and
we have to do it, but that's when they're at their best.
Yeah,
because the best comedy has a point of view.
Right.
That's why, like early stand-ups, it's tough to watch them because they all do the same. Jokes about their genitals or what it's like
bodily
to date.
Bodily functions.
Yeah.
And they don't make it personal. So
exactly.
It's with stand-up, you have to make it personal. With sketch, you have to make it interesting, I think, right?
Yeah, but it has to have a point of view.
Okay.
During election years,
right?
They do their best work, because especially now, post-election, they've been – or even leading up to election. Election years are always great for them, but they've been doing some of their sharpest work. And after Trump was elected –
Right, because every week is a shit show, if not every day.
They sharpen their teeth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where you see sketches that are more message than humor.
Right.
And that's when it falls apart. But
when
you're able to, you know, good sat – I think
– Political comedy satire, is super hard.
It is. But good satire, I think, is channeling your anger into something productive.
Right.
And that's not always easy to do when you have a national television show. You have a few million people are going to watch if you have a good sketch.
Yeah.
Many million more will watch it.
Right. Right.
So
have you been watching it from the get?
I mean, I'm 40, so I was born 2 years into
I'm
the
50.
Run.
Yeah.
But,
so.
I started watching, I'd say I saw my first episode when I was 5.
Okay.
At a real young age. My
That's
parents
super young.
Were way
yeah.
into comedy, so I was raised on stand up and sketch.
That's cool.
SCTV, Robert Klein, HBO special.
Right.
And then Carlin, Richard Jenny, Jake Johansson.
Oh, they had a very – talk about a point of view. Your parents had one.
Yes. Yes, they did. But SNL was like – that was
– Yeah.
They were the perfect age when
right,
it came
out.
Right,
because it's sort of erudite satire and with a genuine hardcore silly edge.
Yeah.
So that's what they – that's what all of those comics make me think of that you just named, Jake yeah. Johansson and Robert Klein. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
And you had a group of performers and who were also writers that came out of Second City Chicago.
Right.
During the late, you know, they came through in like the late 60s, early 70s. So politically charged,
yep.
strong point of view. A bunch of them worked with National Lampoon and did Lemmings and the Radio Hour.
Yep.
And then you have Lorne Michaels, who I think had worked with Rowan and Martin.
Really?
He had that sort
How
of laugh
old is
in TV
Lord
variety
Michael
show.
Now? He's got to be in his 70s.
He's a vampire. He's actually 3,000 years old.
Excellent. Is he the 2,000-year-old man?
Uh-huh.
Finally.
It is. He's
he was
the one.
Based, he, that's who he based it on.
Yeah, that's right. Mel Brooks was his protege.
Right.
it's just an interesting – everything about that show just intersected at the right time.
Right. So when it started – So have you gone back and watched those seasons, or do they just have best ofs?
No, you can go back, and I have the first few seasons of box sets, and they started replaying them at a certain point, so you can watch most of them. But the first episode is a very different version of what it turned out to be. Okay. Carlin was the host.
Okay.
He was not in any of the sketches. He just did stand-up as an interstitial.
Yeah.
And the sketches, like... You always look back at the era of SNL that you watched when you were younger as the best era.
Okay.
And a lot of people go, we can't beat the original cast. And in terms of star power, it's really difficult to argue that. The first cast had Chevy Chase, Belushi, Aykroyd, Garrett Morris, Jane Curtin, Lorraine Newman. I know I'm forgetting someone. Gilda Radner.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
And George Allen Coe. I think for just one episode.
Oops. Yeah.
But, you know, they were all powerhouses. But the first show doesn't necessarily work the whole time. There are a lot of sketches that people are kind of sitting on their hands during.
Well, and any show takes a second to sort of figure out, even if they came up all – were they all Second City people?
Most of them were. Jane Curtin wasn't. Lorraine Newman was a founding member of the Groundlings.
Okay.
Garrett Morris was – he'd done like Cooley High –
what's that?
It was a drama from the 70s, like a dramatic film.
Oh, okay.
So he was like a dramatic actor that was brought in.
Oh,
and he never quite fit. It almost felt like they were like, well, we're all too white. We need to have a black guy. Super talented.
They were like, he can do it.
But not a sketch performer. It's a different, being a sketch performer is different than being an improviser, which is different than being stand-up. Not that you can't cross over.
No, but you have to relearn. You have to reinvent the wheel to some extent, and it makes you appreciate those other tasks when you do those other tasks. Obviously.
Absolutely,
those are and the people who are good at it. So
yeah.
Garrett Morris was a dramatic actor, and they were like, "We're going to need a black guy.
Yeah,
you're going to be that black guy because you're really good at what you do." And he's like, "Did you want me to be an architect?"
Yeah.
Because I could also do that.
Exactly. But also like a paying job? Sure, I'll take it.
Right. Well, that's – I mean, you're like, how can I – it's classic. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But,
wow.
But it's – you know, it's not – there's no era that's perfect.
Yeah.
It's always hits and misses. Even in a show, there are very few shows that are perfect.
Well, in 42 years.
Yeah.
42 – I mean – will it continue when Lorne Michaels eventually is stabbed to death with a spike? What's going to happen? And the thing is some years he's vilified and some years he's canonized.
Yes.
And you're like, well, who's the real Lorne Michaels? Well, who cares? He's probably a whole person.
Yes.
And
exactly. It's always every bad year they're like, well, is SNL being canceled?
Right.
Is this the final season? And there have been some terrible shows. It's usually terrible when it's in transition.
Right, where like sort of three or five of the initially, what were there? Six, you say? Six or seven people?
There were.
You just named them.
It was Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd,
John
Belushi, Gilda Radner, Jane Curtin, Lorraine Newman, Garrett Morris.
Okay.
That was sort of your original core cast. George Allen Coe was there, but sort of went away.
Right.
Michael O'Donohue was sort of a featured player, but
right.
He was more of a writer than anything else.
And this is in like 77?
This is 75.
75. Okay, 1975. Okay.
Then after the first season, Chevy Chase was the breakout star of the first season.
Okay.
And he left to go do movies.
Fletch, of course.
Left to do Fletch.
He left to go do all the Fletches.
Yeah, he'd signed a 9 Fletch deal. They only got to 2 of them.
Right. I don't know if you've read any of the Fletch books.
I haven't, but I've heard they're...
Well, 3 of the 9 are pretty good, actually. I would say 2.5. 2.5 are good, and then there's trouble.
Yeah.
And when he protects the president, you just want to go, stop writing, Mr. McDonald.
You're done. You're out of ideas.
You're out of ideas.
Move on to something else.
He moved to Flynn, is what he did.
Oh,
I don't know
boy.
If you ever read Flynn.
No.
Nope. Nobody has. Anyway, so...
was that a Fletch impersonator?
It was an Irish... sort of cop, Inspector Flynn out of Boston.
Okay.
And the first two of those are pretty good, actually, right. too. So the guy has, like, I mean, publishers. I blame it on them going, well, unless you have a new idea, I bet you could make another $12 writing this thing.
Yeah.
So.
But he's good at writing pairs of books about
right.
characters.
Yes, yes. Two for two.
Yeah.
So Chevy Chase, was Bill Murray?
He left and Bill Murray was brought in.
Oh, okay.
And there is a bit that he does at the end. I think it was at the end of one of the shows early in his run where he was like, I know you guys don't like me.
Oh.
What do I have to do?
Yeah.
I think the turnaround for him was a scene where he was in the shower and he had a microphone soap on a rope.
Okay.
And he was hosting. It was like he was hosting a talk show.
Yep.
And he's singing. He's doing his, like, sort of what became the lounge singer.
Okay.
It's like a lot of Bill Murray just sort of unleashed.
Okay.
He brings in his wife, and the guy his wife is sleeping with.
Yeah.
But the whole time he's like, hey, everybody, it's me, blah, 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 blah. And that sort of turned the tide for him.
Oh, so that was, like, Bill Murray trying to get into the team after Chevy left?
They were
like, you guys don't like me because I'm replacing somebody?
No, actually, he was another Chicago guy.
Okay.
So they all liked him. There is a story of Chevy Chase coming back to host and he and Bill Murray getting into a fist fight.
Okay.
I think because of Jim Belushi and Chevy Chase didn't get along.
John?
John Belushi.
Right.
Jim Belushi probably didn't like him either, just backing up his brother. But John and Chevy Chase didn't necessarily get along, I think, from stuff I've read, because John thought he should be the star of the show.
Right.
And so Chevy Chase comes back and Bill Murray's looking to pick a fight.
Oh, okay.
Because John Belushi is his kin.
Right. So that's – well, I heard that Chevy Chase has some – I mean, he's a bit of a pill.
He's supposedly banned from hosting the show anymore.
Okay.
After his last time, which was in the 90s, he was apparently very rude to people, which sucks.
Which does suck because – I mean, it's hard, as always, it's hard to separate the personality from the artist. But
sure.
As an artist, he was super likable.
He was
a really funny, likable jackass.
Yeah.
He was that Fletch character, the Caddyshack business. Was he on Caddyshack? No,
that was. He was.
Oh, Bill Murray.
With Bill Murray. And they have one scene together.
And that's it.
Where Bill Murray comes in that is completely improvised.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And I think they had buried the hatchet, but you know, that was Bill
right.
Murray as a young upstart and
yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, when you're 24 and you think you've got someone's back and
yes.
they didn't ask you to have it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You're like you're actually just ruining the workplace.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
but the worst seasons of the show were always where generally they at a certain point everybody sort of turns over.
Okay.
I think right now we're in the longest streak of
people
cast blending into cast.
Okay.
So Lorne Michaels left the show after 5 years,
oh.
and Gene Demanian took over as producer in 1980. I think it's a man.
Gene Demanian?
Yeah,
Armenian?
Gene Demanian.
Okay.
I can't remember if it's a man or a woman.
Well,
could be either.
Could be either.
Who knows
how
they
identify? Armenian? Could not be.
Could
we don't
be,
know.
Could not be.
My
could
father
be French Canadian.
Constantly
too.
Telling me that. The technicians were Armenian. So it's a reaching from Wisconsin when you're Armenian from Wisconsin.
Yes.
So anyway, how did that person, how did Gene do? Obviously
terrible.
Not well.
The show was terrible. It was called, that was when they started calling it Saturday Night Dead.
Oh, geez.
And that cast had.
How many seasons of that?
It was one. So that cast, the people I can remember from that cast are Gail Mathias.
Uh-oh.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Okay.
Denny Snicklets. Dillon.
Denny Dillon.
Denny Dillon.
What did Denny Dillon
a young
go
Denny Dillon. She went on to play Martin Tepper's assistant on Dream On.
Okay.
And do other, like, she's a really funny actress. It just
right.
wasn't the right fit.
Well, that's, I mean, that is something else about Saturday Night Live. If you are not a breakout star,
yeah.
it's too bad. It doesn't mean that you're not a huge deal. You
exactly.
know, it doesn't mean that you're hugely talented. It just means that for some reason it didn't gel.
Yes.
And, but that was only one. So he did 75 to 80. Gene
did 80 to 81.
Right.
Also in that cast, Charles Rocket, who did the news and was the first person to say the F word on SNL.
Okay.
He said fuck during like a news, like, oh, fuck. Or I fucked up or something like that.
Right. And it was live.
Yes.
Okay.
Joe Piscopo was in that cast.
Okay.
And the featured, one of the featured players, if not the featured player, was Eddie Murphy.
Oh, that's right. He was known to have been the one who saved the show of some sort, right? Because he was super young.
Dick Ebersol took over in 81.
Yep.
And he kept Eddie Murphy and Joe Piscopo. And that's when they brought in like Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Brad Hall, Richard Kroeger.
I forgot that Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on the show.
Yeah. Mary Gross, Tim Kazurinsky came in during that era. That was this is like 81 up until 81 to 83.
Okay.
Then Lorne Michaels comes back.
Okay.
And does one like all-star season. And that's they keep Mary Gross, they keep Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Gary Kroeger, and Brad Hall. They add Rich Hall.
Okay. That's Sniglitz.
That's Sniglitz.
Gilbert Gottfried is, of course, a huge listener to the Dork Forest.
Exactly.
And is shaking his fist.
Martin Short, Billy Crystal, Christopher Guest.
Oh, my God.
We're all in that cast. And Harry Shearer, I think.
What?
Might have been there.
This is.
Yeah, he was in that cast. Of course he was.
It's points at this in The Dork Forest where I think, oh, I should watch that show. Yes. I bet you there's some really talented.
That was him. Yeah. Like, I came in, I have to have a successful season.
Yeah.
And they all signed 1 year deals, and then Billy Crystal wanted to go spend time with his family and do movies. Martin Short got busy.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, that's a fantastic season. That's where. You've seen the clip of the synchronized swimmers?
No.
It's Harry Shearer and Martin Short, who's his younger brother, who can't swim, and they want to be synchronized swimmers.
Okay.
And
see,
so
that's a funny premise right there.
Yeah, Martin Short has the water wings on. Christopher Guest is doing an early version of Corky St. Clair as their choreographer.
Uh-huh.
He's like, all right, you point and you go, hey, you. I know you, but you're not mad at him. You're just pointing. You're just pointing to him.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God.
It's brilliant.
All right. Well, when I get off this ship, I will have YouTube.
Yes.
And okay.
You can go on Hulu, you can watch a ton of
SNL.
There's a lot of Hulu. They have a lot of content on Hulu because NBC owns it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's plenty of back episodes of that.
Exactly.
That sounds... See, traditionally, that's how I've watched Saturday Night Live. I've watched clips. Mm-hmm. People are like, did you get to see? And then I read Bossy, the Tina Fey book.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
That essentially is all of my knowledge about Saturday Night Live. But, the idea, did you have favorite scenes or do you have favorite, seasons?
Yes.
Okay.
Favorite season. I mean, over the course of 42 years, they've created so many memorable, like it's scenes, it's characters.
Yeah.
By the way, there's a great book. I think it's called Live from New York.
Okay.
And it's essentially an oral history of the show as told by a ton of people, like writers, original cast members. It's an exhaustive, like a tome. I think it takes you through. The early 2000s is when it was published.
Okay.
But it's a lot of like, here's what it was like, and here are the politics of the show. Here's how it was when we were on, and, you know, the 70s were known for partying.
Right.
Because they were all wild.
Right. And it was new. And the, right, exactly. And, but interesting because I wonder if that, because those are the kind of books that I like to listen to on Audible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just because, and this is an ad for Audible. No, it isn't. Yeah. They're not my
This is brought to you by Casper Mattresses. .com with Audible audiobooks
Adam
in the
Adam and
pillows.
Steve, get out there and
get your BarkBox.
The MeUndies, you guys. I'm trying to think of all them. Anyway, so
stamps.com.
But and yeah, but I do hope it's on Audible because that is my favorite way. Because sometimes they get amazing people to do the characters. You know, the Sarah Vowell books. She'll get all the like the cast of it's. Jonathan Stewart and Eric Bogosian and, all these people doing it. And you're like, what is happening? And you're John Adams? And you're playing, who are you? And I'm going to definitely look for that Live from New York.
Yes.
And so it's a giant tome and it gives you and what's the history from the beginning to when? To the early 2000s,
Up until when it was published.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's fascinating. It's a very quick read.
Right.
And it's just interesting, like, it's amazing how many people they spoke with, including Bill Murray. Like, the people you think these people don't have time to be.
Right,
in a book.
And yet you think to yourself, also, it was a such a change in their careers that they're like, I want to be part of this history. Want to be part of this. If you get the right, I guess author or something. So who are your favorite, from like, let's do favorite scenes because that will generate favorite actors.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh man.
Like how about, let's start now. Let's go backwards.
Okay. Jeez. It's hard to think of specific stuff there. Okay. And I think the cast is really
strong.
How about
Laura Keitlinger? I know that she's
Laura Keitlinger.
Still mad.
Janine Garofalo, yeah. The hugest, and Sarah Silverman. They were all on there around the same time.
Oh, were they?
Yeah. And it was close to like, that was like
late 90s or
like 94, okay. 95.
Okay. So
I think it was the somewhere Keitlinger might have been a little earlier because right after that was the reset where they brought in like Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry, Molly Shannon had been there as a featured player and got carried over. Chris Kattan.
Okay.
Tim Meadows stuck around. Tim Meadows is one of those guys who was there for a really long time.
Yep. What's your favorite? Can you think of great scene? And to pick anybody is weird. Because if I pick somebody super obscure and you can't think of them, they'll be slighted when they hear this. But but they can't be because they're not going to listen to it.
Like a favorite cast member?
Yeah, just like offhand. I mean, because there's political sketches. Like yeah. they do a lot of political stuff.
Yes.
But then they also do a lot of just silliness.
Yes.
Like that's some of the stuff that I truly love. Like I do love Weekend Update because it's usually pointed
mm-hmm.
and smart.
Yes.
And they're like, hey, look how dumb politicians. Look at this horrible decision.
It's almost always great.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think Phil Hartman is one of, if not the greatest cast member in the history of the show. Him doing the Frank Sinatra show.
Okay. Yeah.
So he's hosting a talk show as later era Frank Sinatra. This was written by Robert Smigel.
Okay.
And it's just him insulting everybody who's on the show because it's not as tough as him. And they have, I think Sting was on playing Bono or something.
Oh, wow.
Or he was on playing Billy Idol. He goes, you know, they're all fought. And Sinatra goes, I got chunks of guys like you in my stool. It's just such a great. Here's a great sketch. It was a talk show used to do a bit where it was Tonto.
Okay.
Tarzan and Frankenstein. And they were either singing or doing, this one was a talk show.
Frankenstein? Where's the racially insensitive part of that that I need to come on?
Right?
Yeah.
And, so it's Lovitz as Tonto.
John Lovitz as Tonto.
As Tonto. Kevin Nealon is, Tarzan.
Yep.
And then Phil Hartman is all done up as Frankenstein. And none of them can speak in a complete sentence.
Right. Oh, right.
And they get to a point where they talk about, they get to fire. Almost every sketch ends with Phil Hartman going, fire, bad! And then crashing through a wall. But for some reason, they got him to break. And he cannot get through the line, fire, bad.
Yeah.
He's shaking. And
trying
laughing.
Not to laugh.
Yeah. And to see him break is one of the like most, because Jimmy Fallon laughs all the time.
Right. Right.
Through everything to the point where it's like, it's not even ruining the sketch. It just feels like he thinks
are
it's
you at work?
Clever.
Yeah. It's I mean, to have them lose, you know, essentially forget they're having such a good time watching the other two that they forget that they two are at work.
Yeah.
That is kind of an inside baseball kind of wonderful thing to see with the truly gifted. And, I remember Carol Burnett as mm-hmm. a kid some of those are just clips. There's like someone put together all of them breaking at some point. And you're like, well, I kind of actually want to see the sketch too.
But Harvey Korman breaking was so, there's something a little bit, even though you wanted to see the sketch, it was a little bit more endearing than just the sense of like, it just, sometimes it felt like Jimmy Fallon was just a fan of the show. Although I will say he came back to host in 2011. He did the Christmas episode.
Okay.
And I think it's the single best episode of the show ever.
The Jimmy Fallon hosting of Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
From Christmas of?
Of 2011.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I think it was 2011 or 12, somewhere in there.
Just because of his work or because of everybody's work? Like start to finish, it's.
His work is great.
Yep.
And all the sketches are funny.
Okay.
Like they all work. There's a sketch where he's Beethoven. And he's just finished a concerto, and everybody's applauding. There's like the full cast are all in there somewhere. And then they start playing this vamp and he introduces the band.
Yeah.
Like he's just done a Vegas show.
Right.
And each one is like, Beethoven. He's got chlamydia. His wife is 12 years old. Let's say hello to the piccolo player. They each do a little solo. It's just a fun character parade.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that is. Yeah. I don't know. This almost feels like when somebody describes different sketches on Howard Stern.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, that sounds really funny. I'm never going to watch Howard Stern. I'm never going to listen to Howard Stern. But now I got, you know, I want to go back and look at these. These look great.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, they're really funny. And he was a great, he still is, a really great impressionist. But he,
yeah.
And he said in interviews he never wanted to do an impression twice.
And oh.
I don't know why. That was like a principal thing for him. Mm-hmm. I guess he didn't want to be pigeonholed, but. That was, he does a great Seinfeld, and he did that in his first episode.
Okay.
On like a that was one of the early Celebrity Jeopardies.
Okay.
So he was on as Seinfeld.
It's always
weird
when
Seinfeld was there.
When comedy people do comedy people.
Yes.
It always feels super meta. I was like, I think Seinfeld would have been on.
Yeah.
You could have got that guy.
And, I love when a Domian does
oh, anybody. Like Andy Kindler? Or,
yes, his Kindler.
Right. When he picks – like, or he does Marin.
Yes.
Or he does Maria.
Yes.
Where you're like, what is happening? These are – it'd be like me going, well, let me do an impression of my brother.
Yeah.
And except for that more people know those people, but still not that many – not everybody.
But you know, there's some YouTube video of him – doing the prelude to Andy Kindler's State of the Union address at Just for Laughs, where he comes out as Kindler and he's like, I forget what it is. Like,
there's catchphrases.
Yeah,
he's like, insert something that was funny there.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like,
exactly. He does like, you're here for the fun, the stars, a third thing. It's just so good.
Yeah. And let's get James Adomian on so you can hear what Andy Kindler actually sounds like.
Yes, exactly.
Or listen to an old episode of The Dork Forest where Andy Kindler's dorkdom, Sad Sack comic books.
Really?
Like Harry Crumb.
Like Private Sad Sack of the Army?
The Private Sad Sack and his Slice of Life comic book tales. And I was just like, really not depressed enough? Let's go look into that guy who lives in Cleveland. And he's like, but it's so important. I was like, yes. Yes, it is. Because
sure.
It's the Dork Forest. Safe space.
Yes.
What about Fred Armisen?
I love Fred Armisen.
Fred Armisen is a delight.
He's so great. He's so good at doing meta without being mean.
Right.
His comic, like the topical comic. Have you ever seen him do the topical comic?
No.
So he did a Weekend Update bit where he comes out and he's like, my style is I just look at the newspaper and I just riff on headlines. He goes, all right, let's take a look what's in there. Oh, Saddam Hussein discovered in a spider hole. Why? I mean, you can't. Let me take a look. And then at the end, he just goes on this jag. I mean, if you thought in the children, and the point being, when you're, let's take a marriage, for example, you know, like a snack bar would be, and then they cut him off.
Right.
He also.
Because he just hits all premises?
Yes. One time he did a blind prop comic.
Yeah.
Where he goes, it sure is crazy on airplanes. And he starts reaching around in a box.
Yeah.
And then he leans over to Seth Meyers and goes, can you go reach in? There's a pair of headphones with a sign on it says, shut up that baby. And then he goes, you get babies on airplanes, huh? Babies. And then he did a deaf comedian where he did everything in sign language.
Right.
I can't remember. I think it was like intensely racist. Or something like that. And Kenan Thompson was his translator.
Was his translator? Oh, that's funny. Because he was deaf and Kenan Thompson had to say it.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That is – it's a delight. It's – I remember when he got – we were sitting around one night and just chatting it up. And I was like, you know, congratulations on getting Saturday Night Live. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And he said – What are you working on? What are you doing? And I said, well, I'm going to Vegas next week. I'm going to do 14 shows in Vegas for a nickel. And and he was like, oh man, I wish I could do Vegas. That'd be so great. And I was like, I think you could do Vegas, Fred. And he said two of the greatest things I've ever heard. First of all, he said, no, I could not do the road because no one is going to sit around and wait for my bullshit where I change costumes, Jackie. And, And then the other thing he said, you know, and I just have to remind myself that you get what you get, you know, you get to do the thing you get to do and just be happy with that. Cause it's amazing. Whatever you do get to do.
Yeah.
And it really, I mean, it informs a lot of any sort of whatever I feel, any twinge of jealousy or
right.
Hey, why don't I get, you know, you're just like, well, you didn't get to.
Right.
Keep writing. keep
totally.
Along. Exactly.
Have you ever seen Fred Armisen's Fit for Tappin' video?
Nope.
It's him.
Fit this for Tappin'?
Fit for Tappin'.
Okay.
He, this is pre-SNL where he goes, he's never danced before in his life. He makes a pair of tap shoes.
Yeah.
Makes a terrible headshot and then goes to a live dance, like a tap dance audition.
Yeah.
Which they film. And they, the way they do it is they're all in a circle and they all tap. Mm-hmm. Like with their feet,
yep,
to keep time, and then each person does a solo. When they get to him, he just keeps tapping his foot, and the second time around, he just shuffles his feet around like crazy, yep. And then eventually gets kicked out. But watching him audition,
and it was a real
audition.
Another
one who never breaks. Yeah,
yeah, he
it was
does
a real audition.
Yeah, it was. It used to genuinely kind of make me a little uncomfortable. I saw him do, and I think he did it on Conan, where he did a cop. He did a Minneapolis police officer teaching somebody how to do self-defense. And I can't even remember what the punchline was because it was so real.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the guy, you know, you meet these people who, like, if you poured any script into that guy, you'd be like, oh, that guy exists now. It's sort of like Steve Carell.
Yes.
Was he on Saturday Night Live?
He hosted. He's one of those guys who auditioned and didn't get cast.
Oh, okay.
But his wife, Nancy, was on.
That's right.
For
yeah.
For a year or two.
That's right. I knew that there was some Saturday Night Live because
yes.
I saw Nancy the other night.
Yes.
And we did a benefit for there were, at-risk youth, 11 to 13, who wrote, plays.
Oh, cool.
At little plays. And we did scenes from the plays. As a fundraiser.
Oh, wait, which?
Miley Flanagan, Melissa Denton, Unusual Suspects.
Okay.
Is the name of the, unusualsuspects.org, you guys.
Guys, come
dash
on.
Off.
And get a free Casper mattress.
And don't forget.
Which code
and,
charity.
Use my Amazon banner, you guys. And so, that one's real. Okay, so. And when Nancy was on, Nancy Wahl.
Yep, 95 to 96.
95 to 96 she was on, and then she went to Daily Show, I think, right?
Yes, that's where she I don't know if she went directly there or was there a year or two after.
Cuz that and I think that they were both from Chicago as well. Most of the I read this in the Tina Fey book is that a lot of the actors are from Chicago.
Yes.
And a lot of the writers are from Harvard.
Yes.
And,
yeah, Conan O'Brien was a Harvard guy who
right.
went there. I'm hard-pressed to think of others, but I know that
well,
they're there.
Tina Fey said that it was a perfect kind of storm of sort of kind of Goomba Chicago dudes and super elite Harvard guys.
Yes.
And together, there's, you know, somebody's getting a wedgie, but they're expounding something.
Yeah,
right?
It's a good, perfect mix.
Yeah, yeah, it's a nice mix.
You have
mix.
To have both.
If you have both, then it's clearly going to be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And awesome. So.
Yeah. And now is, I'd say, the last 20 years have been the best time for women on the show.
Okay.
Like strong women. Tina Fey, Maya Rudolph.
Oh, right.
Molly Shannon, Anna Gasteyer,
mm-hmm.
Amy Poehler, Tina, and now Vanessa Bayer, Kate McKinnon, Kristen Wiig.
Okay.
So many, like, fantastic. Leslie Jones. So many fantastic.
Right. I've seen Ghostbusters.
Females.
I know what's going on.
You know.
I got some of those names in my head. The rest of them I do not. So what are they? Yeah. What? How are they? Are they casting? Like, you know, you hear all I hear are the criticisms.
Sure.
And I don't watch enough television to check these criticisms. I just repeat them. No, I don't repeat them.
Just
but
lump
I mean,
in with the herd and get it going. Get angry.
Get angry. Fix it, you guys. Because they're, to some extent, they're not doing a lot of blackface anymore on television.
Right.
That's been brought down. But they're still sticking men in women's clothes and dashing them off in heels because it's hilarious.
They do sometimes, but not as now the women are so good.
They're like, how about a woman plays a woman?
Yes.
Or, you know, and you can do that. And I get it. It's actors and there's a twist and it's.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Kristen Wiig's work on the show? Any of the sketches or anything?
I've seen the Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
And I
That's
and that isn't, and that's Kate McKinnon. That's not even good.
Kristen Wiig,
I'm going to go with a no.
She did a ton of different characters. One of my favorites, they would do a Lawrence Welk show sketch with Fred as Lawrence. He goes, "All right, pardo, pardo. Here from the Finger Lakes, we have the McKenzie sisters." And then it would be, they would be in their finery, and it would be
like some sparkle.
Three beautiful sisters.
Yep.
And then Kristen Wiig's got a forehead the size of a billboard.
Right.
And baby doll arms for hands.
Right. So they jack her.
And one giant snaggle tooth.
And they just jack her up with these three gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, sisters come and sisters go. We're all together, sisters. And they're talking about their men. They're like, with my husband, with my boyfriend, with my fiance. And then Christopher goes, by myself. Such a great heightening. And it's always like she ate a cat. And was
the way
that
she
bad.
Sings it. And
yeah,
it's
they get
just,
to her thing. She's like, I found a cat and I ate the cat and I cooked the cat and then I buried it in the yard. Is that bad? She's another one who never broke. But
right.
Another great Fred Armisen sketch, though.
Yep.
Bill Hader is a therapist
who's
presenting a play to a group of people.
Okay.
He's like, I work with patients who have they have short-term memory loss. They're not able to retain memory. But due to my work, they're about to perform an entire one-act play, and they will not forget one word.
All right.
So he's in the play, and he's sitting there, and in comes Fred Armisen in, like, a New York Knicks jersey.
Okay.
The hat on, and comes in and just goes, line, and just nobody remembers anything. And the whole time, Bill Hader's sitting there, pulling the newspaper down, going, "Honey, it's good to see you. Thanks for coming in." Just trying to feed them the lines.
Oh, give feeding the lines.
He's feeding the lines to them,
and none of them remember.
None of them remember. They don't know where they're going or what they're doing or why they're there. It's so good.
Right. That is just hilarious. I think I want to watch it now.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I want to watch it?
Why wouldn't you? The late 80s was a great time.
Yep.
Dana Carvey.
Okay.
That's Phil Hartman. Jan Hooks.
Okay.
And Nora Dunn, Victoria Jack.
A
great group of performers. And that was like a bounce back year. So they had the All-Star year.
Yep.
I know where I could run this for 3 hours.
Please.
What time are we at?
Check. You got another 20 minutes.
Fantastic.
Knock
yourself
out, man. It's
After that All-Star year.
Yep.
Lorne Michaels like, this show is not about established stars coming in. This is about giving younger voices a chance to develop. So his cast was Randy Quaid, Joan Cusack, Robert Downey Jr., Anthony Michael Hall.
What?
John Lovitz, Denitra Vance, Terry Sweeney, not female Terry Sweeney, male
Terry
gay
Sweeney.
Terry Sweeney. And is that it? Am I forgetting someone? I'm sure I'm forgetting someone. But that's
an amazing cast.
That was their cast. But they didn't make sense for the show. Not all of them were – Robert Downey Jr. is not a sketch player.
Right.
Neither is Anthony Michael. Anthony Michael Hall was 18 years old.
Right.
When they cast him.
Oh, my God.
Just not the right age.
Right. Eddie Murphy did it, but that was lightning. You can't recreate that.
Eddie Murphy is
he's a person unto himself.
Exactly.
It turns out that guy is that guy.
Cannot be replicated.
It's – wow. Holy smokes.
They ended that season, which was panned
by
critics, with all of the cast trapped in a fire. The room was on fire. And
That's a very funny sketch.
Lorne Michaels grabs John Lovitz and pulls him out.
And that's it?
And then it's who's going to survive for next season. That was the cliffhanger that ended that season.
How meta is that? I mean, it is pretty self-referential sometimes, right?
Yes.
Because people break and people talk about being in a sketch while they're
sometimes,
in a sketch.
Sometimes they do.
They try not to, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, in an ideal world, you're just doing a sketch.
Absolutely.
You get the laugh. You get the hell out.
Yes.
You do another sketch.
Absolutely.
But I suppose especially if the cast is on fire like that, to light them on fire is actually hilarious.
Yes.
And
to burn them down.
Exactly. We have to rebuild.
And that was another one where this could be the last season because it didn't go well. And
right.
then 80, 86 to 87 was such a strong year. That cast was so good. Mm-hmm. And Carvey was like the breakout star. They had Dennis Miller.
Right.
Before anybody knew exactly how conservative he was doing Weekend Update. And he was a great, I mean, he's.
Yeah. Dennis Miller just lost, for some reason, he just bought into his own hype.
Yeah.
And then lost his mind. I ran into him. I've met him twice.
Uh-huh.
And, so, which means I don't know him.
Right.
Just so everyone knows. I opened for him accidentally. He didn't have an opener in Reno. Mm-hmm. And, I was doing Catch Rising Star in Reno. Mm-hmm. My career's on fire, you guys. I've always, always do the finest gigs ever. And so I'm doing this catch, in the Reno Silverado Hotel or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And in the basement, there's a theater that, he's doing. Dennis Miller is doing, and so they come up and they're like, "Hey, he said he's only going to do 45. Can you do a half hour in front of him?" And I was like, "Is there money?" "Yes, of course I can."
Right.
And so I go down, and this was only like 5 or 6 years ago, and so I go up, and I had on tape because I recorded it because I thought, "Oh, it's a great audience. Going to beat the me recording up in the four wall upstairs."
Right.
So on the end of my set, Dennis Miller says to me, you can hear him because we're across on the stage, and he goes, "Has Jay seen you?" And I said, "Jay who?" And he goes, "Leno." And I was like, "Oh no, don't be ridiculous." And so maybe it was 10 years ago, but and then the other time I was opening for Brian Regan in Santa Barbara, and he lives in Santa Barbara, as does Bo Derek, and that guy who she goes out with, who's famous, who was in Northern Exposure as the radio guy, who was in Sex and the City.
Oh,
as the love interest.
And the guy from my Big Fat Greek Wedding.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
I don't remember his
name.
And
the three of them, I guess, very conservative.
Really?
And, yes, and they all came. And the only person who was nice to me out of the three of those banana heads was Bo Derek. And I was like, and first of all, I was blown away that I was meeting Bo Derek.
Right, of course.
Who, by the way, still a 10, 62.
Really?
Yeah, turns out that bone structure, that keeps going.
Oh, mazel tov.
So, mazel tov to her, indeed.
Yeah.
And she was very nice to me. So, yeah, anyway, but he was very funny on that show.
He was, because he's so good at delivering. There's such a rhythm to his jokes. It doesn't matter what he's saying.
Right. As long as it, and if he has script, then he's saying the sort of the right things.
Yes.
And this is, I weed off, of course, but his stand-up, when he started buying into his own hype and he started going purposefully obscure instead of just doing, it'd be like me doing nerd jokes only because I have, you know, I have 1,000 people who love those nerd jokes. And I'm like,
right.
Yeah, but they have the rest of their brains work too. They also like a weird dog joke. They have dogs. They're also people. And talk about the rest of it, right?
Yeah.
So, but he, you know, he kept like, you're like, nobody wants to hear about the Peloponnesian War right now.
No.
It's, and why do I have to Wikipedia?
Plus, you're on Monday Night Football. Please stop.
Yes, yes. And, but he did, and he, but he really wasn't, didn't do sketches, right? He just did Weekend?
Right. Very rarely. He was in the penis sketch, which was a Matthew Broderick sketch where he's at a nudist colony for the first time. It's like, hey, everything's normal here.
Right.
And all they do is go, hey, nice penis. And they all they do is talk about each other's penises. They must say penis 9 billion times over the course of the sketch.
Right. Which is funny for 45 seconds.
Yes.
How long did that sketch go on?
It's still happening right now. They haven't finished filming it.
Right, because everyone has a 7-year-old in them. Who,
yes.
And then the phone rang, you guys.
Oh, that must be the fine folks over at Blue Apron. If you want a home-cooked meal.
I'm recording a Dork Forest. This is how ironic that it would happen. This only happens in my house. Hello? Hey, Danielle. Yeah. AM? Sure, I should be fine. Yeah. Yeah, if that's the only time. And just ping Gail, and I'll ping her as well, and we'll knock it out. Oh, fair enough. And Hal Loveland says hello.
Oh, hello, Hal Loveland.
Thank you. Okay, bye. I knew it was her. She's setting up a Gail Simone one. So there you go. It was Dork Forest related.
Sweet. She's so the best. Danielle's the best. She can do whatever she wants anytime.
Right. And Rangers of the Dork Forest, it was a usually it's just a sales call because I forgot to turn the phone off in my house. So this was actually podcast related.
Fantastic.
Okay. So, yeah. So I forget what we were talking about, though.
We were talking about the penis sketch.
Oh, that's right. That's still going on.
Yeah, a lot of the sketches are too. It's tough. I took a class once from a guy named Michael McCarthy who wrote for SNL in the early 80s and is a Second City guy for Sesame Street. But I took a sitcom pilot writing class with him and an SNL sketch writing class.
Okay.
And it is hard to write a sketch. Like, they need to be long. Normally, like, your instinct when you're a sketch writer is like a. He used to say a good sketch is like a rock and roll song. You're out in 3 minutes or less.
Right.
But these, because they have to fill time, instead of writing, you know, 10 2.5 minute sketches, write 5 5-minute sketches. They need to be longer.
Right, because then they have to reset everything. They get everybody in their costumes. It's the Fred Armisen stand-up problem.
That's right.
And, exactly. So I wonder... Let's fix it. No, here's
fantastic.
Fantastic. It isn't broken.
We have notes.
No one has any problem with this except me.
No, so, there are a lot of people who are like, well, it's weird. The endings aren't always so great.
It'd be kind of great, like, if you were going to write, like, let's say it's a synchronized swimming thing.
Uh-huh.
You've got that sketch. Joke ends at 2.5 minutes. How great would that be?
Yep.
2:30. They get out of the pool. They continue the sketch. New sketch. Same outfits. Five-minute sketch.
That's right? Like the Monty Python or Mr. Show style of let's connect these sketches.
Right. They do callbacks, and now here's the other thing. I've never seen Mr. Show.
Oh, Mr. Right. Show's great.
Yeah, yeah. Monty Python, has already been established, I've also never seen.
But you know Monty Python has connective tissue.
I know that those two tend to like call back and within the same show.
Yes.
They're like, let's check back in with the fishing guys.
Yes.
And you check back in and they have another sketch. But do they go back to back? Or do they call back to it?
They call back. There was an SNL once where they called back. They did something early on and then they called back to it in the last sketch of the night. I wish I could remember. It's escaping me right now.
Okay.
But it was very rare. I was like, oh,
yeah.
I can't believe they did that.
Right.
But
I've always liked the idea of that, with Mr. Show and Monty Python.
Yeah, they had Mr. Show was almost more of a through line. Like they set up, Bob and David set up a premise at the top that pays off at the end.
Oh, okay.
And the sketch, like there is an odd segue into a sketch and then it sort of goes wherever it goes. And by the end, they've come back full circle somehow.
Which there's absolutely no, it's not that I don't, I've been laughing at the descriptions of the sketches. There's no reason for me not to watch these things. It's just, I don't know. I'm rereading a really shitty novel. I guess is what I'm doing instead of, instead of getting current references. So I'm busy. Really? Nobody wants to talk about my Dragon Riders of Pern that I'm rereading? Fantastic. And completely insane.
Yeah.
But I do. I like the idea. If it were SNL where they don't do a through line, I'm just saying is that half of the sketch could be Dick in a box.
Yes.
And then afterwards they're having lunch and their dicks are in a box.
Yes.
That would be kind of hilarious because they're still in their outfits.
Right.
They would have to be a slight set change.
I think it's more how the stuff is written because everybody they don't sit necessarily in a big writer's room and go, all right, now we're all going to write this sketch. We're all going to write that sketch. You break off and you're constantly
solo.
Trying to get stuff on the air. If you're a writer, you're trying to get stuff on the air.
Right.
If you're a performer, you're trying to get yourself on the air.
Right. So, don't the performers have to write too?
You have to learn to write for yourself. You have to be able to write for yourself. But also you need the writers. If you're new, there's an established group of writers, an established cast.
Yeah.
Then they don't know what you're capable of and what you can do. So you have to find people. You have to sort of pitch yourself from what I understand. I'm speaking as if, you know, when I was on the show in 93, it was Dave Farley and Sandler and Spade and Rock just hanging out in a dressing room.
Right, talking about how I could use them.
Yeah.
And Yeah, those guys all. It's too bad that their careers didn't work out.
I know. I feel bad for them.
It is so hard.
Man, talk Farley. Talk about a guy.
Yeah.
Virtuoso. Just like
big guy in a little coat. Right.
Big guy in a little coat. Matt Foley, motivational speaker. Look up that one.
Matt Foley, motivational speaker.
The very first one. Mm-hmm. It would be with Christina Applegate was the host.
Oh, really?
And it was essentially a sketch he had done at Second City when he was on Main Stage.
Yeah.
With Bob Odenkirk. I think Tim Meadows might have been in that. Jill Talley, I think, maybe was in that cast.
Okay.
But he's this motivational speaker who's brought in to speak to this couple's kids.
Right.
Who were caught with marijuana or something. I can't believe I just called it marijuana instead of weed. You know what? I just don't. It's very clear. Pot. I'm not in that word pot.
Yeah. Some sort of
jazz
weed.
Cigarettes. Yeah.
Jazz cigarettes.
Jazz hands.
Jazz hands. Hand me a cigarette. Yeah. Hand me a cigarette that
I
has the
gotta set. Have cigarettes. But he's brought in to speak to them, and all he talks about is how he lives in a van down by the river. He's been divorced 3 times.
Oh, my God.
And he lives in a van down by the river. And he just yells. He's constantly – everything with him is – he's so intensely physical.
Yeah.
Like his whole – he used his body as a tool, did not care what he crashed into.
Right.
Just like – the stories about him. There's a really good documentary on Netflix. I can't remember the name of it offhand about Chris Farley.
Okay.
Made by one of his brothers.
Okay.
Maybe Kevin.
Oh, yeah. I see those guys around sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the brothers? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he was a guy who just always needed to be loved and was really sweet, but couldn't ever – he just couldn't overcome his demons.
He needed a motivational speaker.
He needed his own motivational speaker.
Right, because we all need to be loved, and there's that realization where you're just like – okay, get it together. You don't need absolutely every person to love you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, grow up a heartbeat. And not you don't have to grow up the whole time, you know? It just that weird realization is like a whole another part of your body unlocks.
Yeah.
Your brain where you're like, no, it turns out I'm still going to be that kid when my parents got divorced, shucking and jiving, but I definitely need to grasp that they don't have to like me.
Yes. So, absolutely. He never got that lesson.
He didn't get that lesson, which is too bad because he was such a great – I mean, what were his movies? Because there was the transition from some of these people. They got to go to do movies.
Yes, he was in. He did a small role in Airheads.
Okay,
it was an Adam Sandler movie. Mm-hmm. Then he was in Billy Madison as bus driver who eats everybody's lunch.
That's right.
I'm gonna have a banana. and his movies were Tommy Boy.
Oh, that's right.
Black Sheep. Those are the two he did with David Spade.
Right.
I think his last one. Was the one with Matthew Perry. It's not Wagons East because that's John Candy's last film.
It's interesting the transition from doing that to which is it's another one of those things where like, well, you're good at this. Now we're going to give you – you're really good at 5-minute sketches.
Yeah.
If you could carry this 90-minute movie now. And he
did with Tommy Boy. It was a huge hit.
Yeah, that was a huge hit.
Huge hit.
And some of the others did, obviously. I mean, Eddie Murphy and I mean, there were people who could do it, and there were people who could not. But I saw a weird Will Ferrell in Spanish.
The Casa. Yeah.
I bought it because it was almost the greatest movie that I've ever seen.
Yep.
It was so close to being Blazing Saddles.
Mm-hmm.
It was like genuinely like a hair's breadth. The only problem was the casting of Will Ferrell. Because Will Ferrell was too old for the part.
Right.
Because he nailed it. He nailed the part. But it should have been done by like a Cleavon Little. I mean, it should have been a guy who was in his late 20s. And it's too bad because – and I bought it anyway because I loved it. I loved – it was such a dumb, awesome – like indictment on the whole Mexican US thing.
Yeah.
That I was like, I am completely on board.
He was one of those guys who you could tell he was a star, and I didn't like him the first season.
He's hit and miss sometimes.
Annoying.
Yeah.
The one sketch for the very first show of his season that I think was hosted by Mariel Hemingway.
Really?
He and Nancy Walls are a couple.
Okay.
And Mariel Hemingway and her husband are there, and they're in the backyard, and he's talking to them, just having normal conversation every once in a while. He's like, hey, Todd, can you get down off that shed? And then it just gets to, get off the shed! Get off the damn shed! And then he just turns back, these hot dogs will be done in about 5 minutes. Who likes relish?
Right. He does an amazing switch.
Yes.
The guy, I mean, Some people cannot do it. He turns it on and off. And I think I'm trying to think of other people from the show that do that, that I've only seen, you know, in, but it might be. Yeah. I don't
know. That's unique to him. Yeah. And he was one of those guys where, like, if you didn't get him right away, he never changed what he did. You just got on board.
Right. Right.
And you went, oh, well, if he's turning us, then he'll do anything. I know we're running shorter on time.
Right.
We need to talk about hosts.
Oh, I was just about to ask you about your, because
this is what happens when two podcasters get together.
Exactly.
We're
you
both
know.
Sitting here going, what's the time? We got structure here.
I think we're close. And you probably saw me just write down a number. Anyway, but I think it was. Yeah. What I usually do, because I like to pull out a clip and put it on YouTube.
Okay.
As a taste of the show.
All right.
So that's why I write down the time code.
Nice.
It's a little glimpse, Rangers. Anyway, so who are your favorite hosts?
Steve Martin.
Oh, really?
Great host. He's hosted.
Was he ever on the in the
times?
Cast?
No, he just hosted so often that in the 70s that you thought. He's a cast member.
Surely, yeah.
Alec Baldwin, another all-time great.
Yeah.
I think Tom Hanks is maybe the best guest host in the show's history. And he just came back in November.
To do it
just post-election to do it again.
Okay.
And it is the best show they've done in several years. And you can find it on Hulu.
Okay, that's a Tom
Hanks.
Full
episode. Yeah.
Okay.
There was a sketch that went around. There was a game show. They do a Black Jeopardy sketch.
Yeah. I've seen some clips of that.
So it's Kenan Thompson as the host. It was Leslie Jones and I think Sashir Zameda, who's the other African-American woman, and he's a Trump supporter.
And he is the – you know what?
And he's giving the exact same answers.
Yes. I think I have seen
– yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it confused me a little bit because I had to watch it twice to sort of get the joke.
Yeah.
Because it was twisted in such a way where we're like, wait, what is happening here? And I don't always get the joke. Sometimes I listen a couple of times.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Tom Hanks, so he did that one. I have seen that sketch.
Yeah, and that's from that show. That whole show is great. His monologue is him because he's basically America's dad sitting down going, how's it going?
Oh, nice.
I know it's good. He gives America a pep talk.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's really good. He was one of those guys, even from the early times hosting. He's one of the you know somebody's a good host when they have their own recurring character, which he did. His was Mr. Short-Term Memory.
Okay. Yeah, vaguely.
But he had his own theme song.
Yeah.
Which is Mr. Short-Term Memory. Shouldn't have been sitting under that pear tree. He'll meet you yet. But then he'll forget because he's Mr. Short-Term Memory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good – who else has got recurring besides Baldwin?
Well, Steve Martin had the Fest Drunk Brothers with Dan Aykroyd, the Wild and Crazy Guys.
The Wild and Crazy Guy.
Yeah.
That's why I thought he was on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Justin Timberlake, he's like a modern – he's one of those Disney kids.
He
came out of the new Mickey Mouse Club, so he knows – that sort of became in an odd way like kid vaudeville.
Yeah.
So kids who did that knew how to be in a sketch.
Yeah.
And he just happened to be, excuse me, a talented performer.
Right. He just happens to be a triple threat.
Right. And he gets it.
Yeah.
So he's doing. He did. He had a bunch. He has he has one where he's always dressed up in some foam outfit as like a mascot.
Yeah.
And he sings. So if there's one where he's dressed as a giant egg. And he's trying to get people to come to Omeletteville is the name of the restaurant. Will Forte is the other guy.
Yeah.
And he's just singing like, come for breakfast. And then the sketch is always Justin Timberlake doing pop parodies of whatever popular songs and dancing. And then always ending with, bring it on down to Omeletteville. And then he did Robin Gibb.
Yeah.
The Barry Gibb talk show.
Okay.
Jimmy Fallon playing Barry Gibb is an extremely like violent guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, welcome to the Barry Gibb talk show.
That is a Gibb moment.
He loses his mind and then he goes to Robin and said, you have anything to add, Robin? And Justin Timberlake just goes, no, I don't. And then they'll sing. And because Justin Timberlake's a great singer, he can do all those really high harmonies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Dick in a Box guys who had several shorts.
Justin Timberlake. All right. Because here's my, you know, Justin Timberlake. When another, this, Hal, you're getting a real glimpse. By the way, I'm here with Hal Loveland, at Hal Loveland.
Yes.
And, the Max Fun Drive is this week for, We've Got This and Tights and Fights. And you're also in Welcome to Nightville. And then
yes,
you've also
Thrilling
got
Adventure Hour and Surprisingly Nice.
Right. Thrilling Adventure Hour and Surprisingly Nice.
Which, and you can hear me on Venture Brothers season 6.
What? And you play on Venture Brothers?
I was Wide Whale.
What?
And a few other characters in season 6. I did
See,
too.
That's where I'm spending all of my television moments. I'm watching.
You're fine.
I'm fine. I'm watching Venture Brothers and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Perfect.
And The Great American Bake Off.
How is the American version? Because they brought one of the British Bake Off hosts.
Right. I watched all the Great British Bake Offs.
Sure.
And then they brought Mary Berry, one of the judges, into The Great American Bake Off. And she is wonderful.
Great.
And the bakers are worse than the British bakers. They're American bakers and they aren't as good at it. And you just want to go, well, I guess it's going to make America great again. And people should learn how to maybe make some phyllo dough. And it doesn't matter to me because I don't ever want to eat any of the things that the Great British Bake Off make. What
right.
I love about the Great British Bake Off that they actually did a pretty good job with the Great American Bake Off is, and I speak very fast because I know that we got to get back to SNL, but the Great British Bake Off has everyone's nice to each other.
Yes.
It's a reality show that isn't a fucking train wreck of meanness. And even there's like two or three episodes where people are done early and they're like, do you need any help?
Yeah.
To like to their person, to the person who's their competition. And you're like, yeah. Just get everyone, just do the best they can and then go forth into the world to be judged.
I saw an episode once where some guy who had been proven to be a pretty skilled baker had his ice cream removed from the freezer. There was some ice cream. He had to make like an ice cream structure. And then at the end, when they eliminated him, she's like, well, I guess I thought that my ice cream melted, but wasn't my best effort. But, I was just happy to be here. And next time I'll do better. Like, you never get that. It's always like, these motherfuckers hated me.
Exactly.
That bitch took my ice cream out of the freezer.
She took my ice cream.
Kill all of you.
Oh, did you see the one where the guy did have a temper tantrum and threw away his thing?
No.
Yeah, they had to kick him off because he threw away his thing. He's like, well, it doesn't matter, thwack.
Oh, no.
And then when Mary Berry and Paul Hollywood, their real names, came in to judge, they were like, what happened to yours? He goes, well, I threw it away, so it's fine. I guess I'm done. And the other, very stiff upper lip British folks are just staring at him going, man, just suck it up. What is the problem?
Yeah.
And he shouldn't have thrown it out, though he didn't want to hear it, is what he didn't. He didn't want to hear that he didn't get it right.
Right.
And, well, none of us want to hear it.
I can't wait for the show that's him in therapy.
British therapy.
Mummy threw out all my cakes.
My cakes are tossed.
I cannot cook anymore.
Justin Timberlake, yes. Steve Martin, Tom Hanks, Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin, Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy. Now, is she...
Recent?
Is it? That's a more recent one,
she's
right?
She's hosted three times.
Okay.
Or maybe just twice, and she keeps showing up as Sean Spicer now.
Right. Right. I saw
great.
A clip of that.
Oh,
that's perfect. And I could not be a bigger Melissa McCarthy fan. From the Gilmore Girls.
Sure.
Back in the day. And then.
Suki, was that her character?
Yeah. Suki. And she was wonderful. She was a wonderful human on that show. She was almost the only adult. And Rory. But
she set stuff on fire.
A little bit. She was a bit of a klutz.
Yeah.
And, but then The Heat. I don't know if you ever did see The Heat.
Oh my gosh. Many times.
The Heat, which is Sandra Bullock panting to keep up with Melissa McCarthy,
yes.
Finally getting to do the physical comedy. Because nobody loves physical comedy, I think, more than Sandra Bullock.
Oh, sure.
And,
she loves it.
She really does.
Yeah.
And in The Heat, do you ever see Midnight Run?
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think of The Heat as sort of a modern-day Midnight Run.
Yeah.
Just
you know,
because it's a buddy movie that doesn't make – that is just – it's just ridiculous. I mean – Charles Grodin and De Niro are more intellectual,
right?
Or it's less physical, but it's certainly just as crazy to some extent.
How would you like to see a full remake of Midnight Run with Melissa McCarthy in Robert De Niro's role and Kristen Wiig in Charles Grodin's role?
Oh, right? Yeah,
of course you do.
Yeah,
of course.
Oh my God, Yeah, I want to see that. It's and who would play? Who's the character actor who played the other bounty hunter?
Oh yeah. Oh, I forget. That's Leslie Jones, right?
It's Leslie Jones.
Yeah.
It is Leslie Jones.
Yeah,
and Charles Grodin's character just going, "You guys couldn't find your ass with both hands," or something like that. I was like, "Oh my god, it's such a and Paul Feig."
Yes.
Paul Feig directing it.
Brilliant.
The only problem I have with any of the current sort of buddy movies that are like that, these very big comedies,
uh-huh.
is that there's always a weird physical scene where someone's throwing up, the tracheotomy scene,
yeah.
someone loses an eyeball or yes. a tooth, and you're like, unnecessary, all written, not broken, no need to put in some weird gushing. Just make Get Out.
Right.
Make your horror movie and you can have gushing blood all you want. But so good. I loved The Heat. I loved Spy.
Yes.
Spy is great. Love The Heat better. Still love Spy.
Yeah.
Loved Ghostbusters.
Sure.
But then liked old Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Some people love old Ghostbusters. And, I was like, old Ghostbusters, good Ghostbusters. Holds up. Perfectly yeah. good Ghostbusters. New Ghostbusters. More Ghostbusters. Just fine.
Yes.
I was never married to fucking Ghostbusters.
Right. Ghostbusters is in comedies for me is probably a top five movie. However,
oh, really?
I thought the more recent Ghostbusters mm-hmm. did a better job of setting up why they were doing what they were doing than
yeah.
the original does.
Yeah, it had
like two great movies. You don't have to
nope.
like why
just because they have the same
choose?
Name.
Why
we don't.
Like why are you can't You could be protective of something you love in terms of, please don't find every copy of Ghostbusters that exists and burn it in a fire.
Right.
It still exists.
Yep.
Then here's this other thing.
Yep.
Look, the Star Wars prequels exist.
Yep.
I still love Empire Strikes Back, still my second favorite movie of all time.
Mad Max Fury Road
uh-huh.
and The Force Awakens came out within weeks of each other.
Yeah.
And I tweeted something about how that I kind of liked Mad Max Fury Road better than The Force Awakens.
Sure.
But it didn't mean I didn't love The Force Awakens. And
right.
Dan Telfer... comic friend of the show tweeted back and he said, why would you even compare them? Don't even worry about it. They're both great.
Yeah.
And just keep moving. And I was like, point taken. 3 points. Well played, Dan Telfer. So
we feel like we don't have enough room for stuff.
Yeah. There's room for everybody.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's, I saw somebody, they said, just because if everyone has equal rights, doesn't mean that they're taking rights away from you because it's not pie.
Yes.
Doesn't mean there's one fucking pie.
Yes.
And you don't get a piece of pie.
Yes.
Everyone gets rights means everyone gets rights.
Yeah. And let me bring it back to SNL.
Please do.
Everybody has their favorite cast.
Yeah.
None of you are wrong.
Okay.
All the casts have great moments and shitty moments.
Yeah, yeah.
The exception of 1980, which is mostly shitty. There
right.
are definitely
and
bad
mean those
years.
Those people are not qualified.
Yeah, there are yeah. people going like
just didn't work.
Yeah, I can't believe they didn't give Anthony Michael Hall more of a chance. He was a virtuoso. That's not happening. But
right.
all the eras have great stuff in them. So
right.
everybody can be right.
Yep.
Until Mark and I covered and we got this and we decide which one once and for all is the
oh,
best.
Oh, fair enough.
In which
exactly.
case it is settled. You have to shut your mouths about it.
Yeah, check it in. Check we got this.
Yeah.
Check Tights and Fights. Check Surprisingly
Nice.
Nice.
With Travis McElroy.
That's it. Surprising.
He's a podcasting magnate. I'm a guppy yeah.
right.
compared to both of you.
Well,
you're like you're a podcasting vet.
Well,
in the trenches.
In for the duration, you guys, and a early adopter of
yeah.
something that doesn't make any money, you guys. Let's do this.
I was not making money before any of you were
exactly.
making money.
Exactly. It's the only person who beats me, Pardo. And so Max Fun Drive, Welcome to Night Vale,
yes.
Venture Brothers. We got this, Tights and Fights. Turns out Hal Lublin is working, you guys.
I'm trying.
And if you go to @HalLublin, you'll find out what's happening this one day.
Yeah, that's where the skinny is.
That's where it all is. And check out Hal, thank you so much for taking time.
This has taken
this.
Too long to schedule. It's my fault.
But it's all worked out.
But I'm glad that we're here. I'm glad we did it.
It's wonderful. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?